Welcome to Offscript. I am Will May, one of your co-hosts.
And I am Ashley, and we are here to talk about the full disclosure about what it takes to thrive in real estate. And we are on part three of our mini-series of asking the right questions when joining a team or brokerage. And today we're going to be talking about training, money, splits, and the long game. So we're talking about money today.
Monies. All of the uncomfortable conversations. We're going to lay out all of our team splits.
Yep.
Just so everybody is aware of what we offer, and then kind of give a reference of what we should be asking and what you should be looking for from teams and brokerages. Mm-hmm. If you're in a position to make a move or start somewhere new.
Yep. Okay.
Update on our team before we get started. We're at 73 units closed and pending, and we're just over 27.5 million in volume. So we are right on our path to 225.
I'm hearing this at the same time as the listeners because Will's the numbers guy. So I don't pay attention to it. It's too much anymore.
Yeah, I mean, we're rolling right now. So it feels good to be coming into spring.
Yeah,
it's getting busy. And already being where we're at. Mm-hmm. So 72, 73, it's crazy.
It is.
Ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, let's go.
Okay, so let's just dive into some of the key questions that we would ask if we were interviewing. And one is, so this isn't all about money. It's also about onboarding and training. What does onboarding actually look like on your team or at your brokerage? And a good question to ask is it structured or is it self-guided?
Yeah, that's a great question. Mm-hmm. I feel like they're offered in both capacities. There's a really big difference between onboarding and mentorship, in my opinion, mm-hmm. because mentorship is going to be just like a guide of like if you have questions or different things that are coming up as you get onto a team. Whereas onboarding is going to be like, these are the systems that we use. Here's your logins. This is the way we conduct business. This is what happens when you have a new client. Mm-hmm. And I think those things are really, really important. I feel like we're building that as we continue to grow and evolve right now.
Yeah, I feel like our onboarding has been refined and we change it almost every time we bring on a new agent because we realize something that we need to add or we're not using a new system or tool or something has changed because we're just continuing to grow. So ours, we're refining right now.
Yeah, that's the best way to say it. I feel like our entire way of growing has been open up, hire 1, 2, 3 people, let all of our shit break, and then mm-hmm. after that we hire again, and then yep. we let it break again, and then we continue mm-hmm. developing. So we're in that phase right now where we're fixing things mm-hmm. Because now that we've grown to the capacity that we have and some changes that are coming up here soon, we've got to have a much more detailed onboarding with the new systems we have.
Yeah, and I used to love this stuff, and now we've hired somebody who thinks like that. So I'm really excited for Brandy, who's just joined us, because she thinks in systems and operations and those type of things. So she's going to be helping us with onboarding and getting a really good structure when we bring new people on.
Yep, yep. I think that's going to be huge for what we're doing. And I think what we're going to probably work towards, is, like they said, self-guided, is probably go through like a normal onboarding of, you know, 4 to 5 agents mm-hmm. as we start to hire again here in the summer. And then we're going to put that on more of like a video series so that it's a little bit less time consuming for our staff, but also we can be there to guide along the way.
Yeah. What do you think, I mean, in the first 90 days is most important from like an onboarding and training standpoint? Because you can throw a lot of tools and systems at people, but I mean, where would you tell somebody, like, you just got to start? Like, what should they be doing that first 30 days?
Well, here's the thing. Like, when you start your first 30 days is you've got to be getting busy too. It can't be something where somebody or a team or a brokerage is so unorganized that it pulls you away from conducting business. Mm-hmm. You came or you chose a brokerage or a team to sell houses and to build your business. So if you're spending the first 30 days trying to figure out how to get things in the right place so that you can call people, probably an issue, right?
Yeah.
So for me, I would just say like a full understanding of what CRM or systems that are being used. And if you do happen to do, for a new agent, this might be take a little bit more, but if you're a productive agent, if I had a deal tomorrow, what is it that I need to do in order, you know, to put something under contract and mm-hmm. or communicate with the brokerage staff or the team staff? Mm-hmm. So I think just knowing those two things is the first thing, but the second is going to be like what are the standards? What are the principles? What do I need to be doing in order to be talking to my clients that I've switched and that I'm excited about selling more houses?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I was guilty of this too when I first started. A big pitfall for a lot of agents is they want to have everything like perfect and pretty and all their business cards and their website or whatever that is. And you can spend months getting ready so that you're prepared for that first client instead of just starting and then figuring out how to take care of that first client. And really all you need, at least on our team, is Dotloop and being able to put them in the CRM are like the only two things you need to know how to do if you get a client they have an appointment with and you're going to go.
Yeah, it's funny because you get people on both sides of the spectrum where it's like on the first is like everything. I have to have my email signature has to look right before I call somebody. I'm like, I don't know if that's true. And then the other side is like, I just want to get going as fast as I possibly can. And there is, you do have to take things a little bit slow because if you build the foundation right and then you can have a good schedule on top of that, then your systems are in place and you can do a lot more business if you just set the foundation the right way. So there's two sides of that, of like not going too fast, but also like you don't have to have your headshots to make a phone call. Like, right? Like those things don't align. You just need to be conversing with your people and letting them know what's happening.
Yeah. And I mean, for us, very first is, you know, we have a team that helps you get your database into Lofty, which is our CRM. And then you're immediately meeting with Will probably almost every other day, at least, if not daily, just because he does coach weekly. But at first, you're going to need a lot more hands-on attention, just kind of learning the tools and systems. So for us, it's a little bit more one-on-one for the first couple of weeks, and then it just goes to weekly mentorship from there.
Yeah, I think a really good tip, an easy one, is if you make a broker change, a team change, or you're just starting out, if your database isn't built, do a giveaway to every single person that you know on your social media and however many people you can, you know, conjure up into a database. Do a giveaway to get all of their information and to produce some leads early on. People are excited that you made a move, so use that to your advantage.
Perfect. Okay, so transitioning, is there ongoing, another question you should ask, is there ongoing coaching, accountability, or mentorship? So I kind of touched on this already a little bit on our team. So what happens after that first 30, 60, 90 days? Is it, okay, we put all our resources at you, we told you how to use the systems, bye.
Yep.
Like, what happens next? What questions should they be asking about coaching and accountability?
I mean, we say this so much. Like, what's your standards? What what happens on your team? What do you guys do? For us, it's gratitude and intentions Monday, Wednesday, Friday from 9:15 to 9:30, and then we follow up with scripts right after that from 9:30 to 10. Lead gen hour right after that. You have coaching once a week. We have team meeting once a week. Like, we
provide every other week.
Our job as team leaders is to build an environment and an ecosystem where people have a structure to fit inside of. And if they can fit inside of that structure and we can take all the distractions away from them, it allows them to produce more income and or more time. Because at the end of the day, you're either making a change or joining a team or brokerage because you want to make more money or because you need more time. One of the two. And so are they going to be able to provide you that with their standards that they have set and the culture that they built?
And I think, you know, for more experienced or seasoned agents, this is something that even myself, I was guilty of. Like, you get busy and then you forget, like, everybody, in my personal opinion, needs a coach or needs a mentor, somebody that's consistently going to be pushing you. Otherwise, you plateau and you start to just get flat in your business. So I don't think it matters what level of experience you have. I think that constant coaching and accountability specifically is so critical, whether you're a solo agent, joining a team, and how far in your career you are.
Yep. No, I agree. I think training and mentorship is really geared towards people in the first phase of their career, in my opinion. I feel like training is, this is the way we do things. This is the environment we have. There's some accountability there. Mentorship is, you know, if you're running into situations, I'm going to help you through them. I'm going to guide you through certain situations. So I feel like training and mentorship is like that early phase. And once you really start to, you know, understand the industry and you start, you know, hitting your first kind of plateau, that's where coaching and development really comes in. Because it needs to be specialized to what are you doing with your time, not what should you be doing like everybody else.
Yep.
I think that's a really big piece of this. And I would say we're probably one of the few teams that provide, you know, consistent accountability and coaching sessions for our agents as part of being on the team.
Yeah, and I think our team has built that culture in itself where if we're not present, like right now, we're filming this and we're going to be a little bit late today, which we really try not to do. We have somebody else that's there to lead it, and the team has created this culture of accountability within themselves. Nobody wants to be the person on the team that's not performing at a high level. You don't want to be that person.
Yep. No, I agree 100%. And One more thing on coaching, as you're looking at teams, what does the coaching mean? Like, what does that mean to have coaching? Mm-hmm. Is it, hey, we're doing one-on-ones weekly or monthly or bi-weekly? Those are all good, but what happens during them? Mm-hmm. And if that team leader, that coach can't explain exactly what we do, we track our numbers, we go over what happened last week, we put a plan together for next week, and then we put our conversation goals, appointments goals, all that stuff that happens, right? If there's not a structure to what that meeting looks like and they can't explain it to you, then yeah, you're gonna find yourself in a pretty frustrating situation.
Okay, so the fun part, what everybody wants to hear about, splits. I feel like this is always the number one thing that people ask when they're interviewing or looking at teams and brokerages, and probably where most people focus all of their energy and attention. So I'm interested to hear your thoughts on this.
No, I actually want to go back to what we were speaking before we started. Talk about reactive team leaders versus like having a vision and what you're working towards. I feel like that was such a good way that you put things when it comes to like how team leaders act in our our industry.
So I've said this before, I've been a solo agent, I've been on a team, and then now trying to do different things differently as a team leader, just going through the experiences I went through. But what I've seen a lot of times happen is there's not a culture of accountability or standards on a team. And then what that breeds is you end up with all of these different splits, all of these different standards. You have maybe a high performing agent who decides they want to leave. And then what do most of the team leaders do? They throw money at them or throw splits or something to like chase that person to stay instead of focusing on investing more money back into the team or resources, training, and how do I provide value at the split that I am doing instead of just, oh, stay with me, I'm going to throw more money at you. In my opinion, that never works because the teams feels that. There's no consistency. Everybody's on different levels of pay. And it just, you end up having a team that falls apart after a couple of years is what I have seen from my own personal experience. It actually happened to me too when I was leaving somewhere. It was like, okay, we'll go to an 80-20. Okay, we'll go to 90-10. But I didn't stay for the split because I didn't see value in where I was at. And now being on the reverse side of it as a team leader and seeing, I know, and we'll talk about this here in a second, I know we have steeper splits than a lot of teams, but we still have very, very, very high performing agents and we're attracting people into our world without really even trying anymore. And I think that's because of the standards and the culture that we have created, and people have realized, like, I would rather pay more of a split and have accountability, coaching, training, mentorship, a team, a good environment where I'm going to be really successful and do a lot of business than have a higher split that doesn't really matter if you don't have the business and the leads and you're not performing and even doing business. The split really doesn't matter.
At all. No. But what am I getting for that, right? If you're having a conversation with a team or a brokerage about, hey, I'm going to be leaving to go somewhere else to get more value, and they're giving you a better split, you got to ask yourself, why didn't you approach that approach me with that earlier, right? Like, why did it take this much for you to give me a better split? If there's not value to be presented and they're just giving you money, right? There's got to be a reason why that's happening.
Right.
That's because there's not going to be any more value. It's going to be a band-aid fix. You're going to get frustrated at some point anyways. Because if you're a high performer, you're looking to grow, develop, and learn. So yeah, I think that's a big piece of this. And then when it comes to splits on teams, right? Like, I think we have a really great example of like us bringing on a showing assistant that's coming on. She was offered really high splits, right? Like 80-20, 93-7 for a team and or a partnership that was going to be started there. And now we're not all the way down the path with this yet. And we spoke to her earlier before with Julie, right? But like to think about the numbers that have been presented to her on the two and what she's kind of thinking is cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost the opposite of what she was offered. So somebody from the outside just looking at the splits would be like, why in the hell would she ever join your guys' team with that? But here we are 2 weeks later and she's on the, final phases of the interview process and has basically verbally said, as long as you guys will accept me, I'm joining your team. And we're, I mean, we can share this openly. It's because it is our showing assistant role. It is a 90-10 split. 10% to the agent, 90% to the team, and she's on a small base salary. How do you go from that to I was offered 93% to the agent, 7% to the team? Obviously, a lot of conversations have taken place, and there's value there that has been provided for her to see that.
Yeah, and for us, it's about having a team structure that has a growth path and a development role. So that showing assistant has a growth path to either our shared services team or to our core team, our buyer, or to a second buyer's agent on the team, eventually one day. And so why would she take that kind of split to learn, grow, and develop under one of the best buyer's agents in all of Omaha, right? Katie's on pace to do 50 to 70 deals in that range right now. And so to be able to be a part of each and every one of those transactions, how quickly are you learning and growing?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and that's kind of what she touched on with us is that I think she's only done two deals, I believe, or two transactions. So yes, she was offered really, really high splits, but where she's lacking now in the current team that she's on is mentorship and training. And so those splits don't really matter because she's not doing a ton of business.
Yep. And so to explain it, like, yes, you may be taking a step back or what you think is a step back in terms of splits. But if you do that for 1 year, are you going to be able to exit that position and or grow inside of it if we have that growth path for her, right? Are you going to be able to be more productive those following years?
So let's talk about splits. Do you want to talk about it openly?
Yeah, we should. And to wrap that up with our showing assistant, if we took, actually, it was kind of cool. If she had started January 1st up until, I think it was April 3rd or 4th or whatever, that role alone on that base salary and 1090.
I think it was through quarter one you pulled it, wasn't it? January through March.
Yep. So quarter one, it would have been 27,000, 26, 27,000. Like, how many agents are pacing at $100,000?
Right. And that's for our showing assistant role, who's supporting our buyer agent, right? Currently is pacing at 27,000 a quarter.
Yes.
In bonus structure and base pay. So I think that just goes to show, like, that can be a really, really, really good stepping stone for somebody who's wanting to expedite their business, who's maybe new to the industry, or just wanting to sharpen their skill set.
Yep.
And if you want to look at it as taking a step back, that's fine. But I really look at it as it's taking a step to be educated and be able to take a step, like a small step back, so you can move forward like twice or three times as fast.
Yeah, and it feels good at what we're building, the structure we're building works, right? Like, I think there's a crazy stat last year, 74 or 76% of agents did zero or one deal. Like, we're providing a showing assistant role that has potential to go over $100,000 a year and then have the path to become a buyer's agent and or full-time agent is like, you have to have such a good structure to have that built at a year or two. So that's where value comes from when it comes to splits. So do you want to go over our splits for shared services?
Yes. So we have the two divisions, if you will.
Yeah. Teams, divisions.
Core team and shared services. So our shared services, for those listening, is going to be more of probably what most of you are and what I would consider a traditional model where you're helping both buyers and sellers. And they're plugging into our systems and tools and the operations and all the things that we offer on the team. So those splits on the buy side specifically are 70-30.
Yep.
And then on the list side, and outside of all of the things that our team offers, we pay for all of their marketing, photography, staging, pre-inspections, cleaning, all of that. They are on a 60-40 split on the listing side.
Yep. And then we have that built out of what kind of value is there. But our goal with the shared services group is to model and practice what our core team does, what's working in the current market today. Once we know it works in the core team, we put that structure in some way, shape, or form into shared services so they can benefit from the practices that we're trying. The stuff that doesn't work obviously doesn't make it to them. And then the value adds that we've built inside the team with our operations team, we have a staff of four or five full-time salaries, is to take as much off of their plate as possible. So what they have to do is, you know, what do you call them? Your five
plans, prospect, lead gen, go on appointments, negotiate deals, and work on their skills.
Yep. So if we can get them discussing things with their clients, negotiating, talking to their database, doing sales, right? And if we can do that and get them in front of more people, that's why we have a minimum standard of 18. With the staff that we have and the amount of structure we have for our shared services, if we're not doing 18 deals, we're probably not right for our system.
Yep, 100% agree. And then now I'm proud to say we're in such a different place than we were a year ago. Before it was, we don't really offer leads, we're working on it. And then it was, we're kind of getting there. And now I feel like we can confidently say when we're meeting with people, we are offering set appointments for buyer consults and listing appointments with our shared services team because Anthony's been doing a fantastic job mentoring Shannon and obviously Will, you leading the lead gen department. So it's kind of cool to see how that's grown and we can actually now say that.
Yeah, it's been really cool. So if you're going to a team for leads, I think there's like a big benefit to have leads on a team and I think a lot of teams are built on that. But are they giving you leads that you're just working and saying good luck, here's 5 to 10 leads? Are they giving you one or two? per month? How many leads per month are you getting? And secondly, are they training you and developing you and coaching you, giving you scripting on how to convert those consistently? Mm-hmm. A lot of times it's like, hey, here's your login, or here's your leads that are going to be coming. Here's your scripts. Good luck. Mm-hmm. And then you're just stuck on your own to go do that. And what we've been fortunate to focus on over the last year and like really play long game with this, because we had some short-term success with our ISA department, and then this like gap of, it was like a dry spell between months like 5 and 8, I would say. And then bringing on Anthony has really started to spark things again. But we've been perfecting a model where, yes, we're giving out leads to follow up on, but the end goal is to set appointments on our agents' calendars so they don't have to do any of the follow-up.
Mm-hmm. And when they cancel, Anthony follows up for us, which is great.
Well, because Anthony, think of him as like his own team leader, right? He owns that lead, and nobody's going to care about that lead as much as he does, right? And so I told him, like, just be on them. Like, if they're not following up, take it back. You do the follow-up, set it, give it to somebody else, and or set it back for them. But over the last 2 weeks, now we've transitioned from handing leads off to now we're setting 2 to 3 appointments a week over the past 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And that's only going to get better as we go, because they're learning how to follow up. They're learning how to script better. Like, our systems are getting to such a better place that when we're able to set appointments for you, that's going to be like...
They're much more qualified.
The best leads, right?
Yep. 100%. And then... on our core team, which is more of our specialized division, if you will. So for those of you who've been listening, you're already familiar with this. I work exclusively with sellers. Katie's our lead buyer agent. She works with buyers. And then now we're kind of coaching and mentoring Maya to really focus on leading up our new construction division side of things. So we have new construction, buyers, sellers, lead gen department, and then our operations team of opportunities for growth in that. But with that being said, our core team specifically, everybody on that is on a 50-50 split on the buy side. So again, seems a little bit steeper if you're comparing to that to teams, but with that comes much, much more leads.
Yeah. I mean,
and all of the other things that shared services is getting.
Yeah. And not, I don't know the exact number off the top of my head for last year, but the previous year was, I think, 38 buy sides and 28 of them came from, were lead based, not coming from a buyer's agent. So, to be not handed, but to be trusted to have leads that you can convert. Like, we want to create buyer's agents that have so many great skills that they're really great at conversion. Mm-hmm. We don't have to be good at all the other things, because we want you to be good with our people. And that's the whole point of building a system and a process for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, to speak to other teams at this point, I don't even know anymore, because we've been kind of doing our thing for so long. So, I mean, that's what our splits are. We're transparent about them. I don't really know what other people are offering, but that's where we're at. I mean, I know we're steeper than some other teams because I've heard that feedback. And Will and I had a really good conversation about this morning, actually. And I'm really proud to see where we are today in reflection of all of it, because a year ago, even 2 years ago, you know, you question things as a team leader. You're like, man, am I providing the value I say I am for the splits that we're offering and all of that? And you start to question yourself, and should we change the splits? But I feel like we believe so firmly in the vision of where we're going and what we wanted to build, and all of the pieces that we wanted to invest back in the business to help our agents be more successful. We just stayed the course. We lost some people along the way. We lost people through the interview and the recruiting process that we weren't a good fit for. But in reflection, I just feel like they weren't ready at the time and the place for what we were doing, and they weren't in a position where they wanted that level of accountability and standards. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that at all. But it's attracting the talent and the accountability and the people of high standards that we want in our world. So it's really cool to see where we are today. And now I don't feel like we're chasing. Now I feel like we have so many people coming to us wanting to join, knowing that our splits are a little bit steeper because of the value that they're getting.
I agree with that. I was talking to somebody last week that's been in the industry for 20, 30, 35 years. And just hearing stories about teams and different, you know, people that have grown in the industry, everybody always starts out, not everybody, a lot of people start out with like, hey, I'm only going to bring productive agents in. Mm-hmm. And then once they start to grow, they start hiring in masses, right? Like anybody that you always hear, anybody that can breathe, they can be on the team, is what people start to see as the culture changes. So I think for us, it's going to be how clear of a vision are we going to stick to, and are we going to have the discipline to only bring in people that align with our branding and our standards? And if we do that, I think, you know, we'll see the continued growth that we've already seen.
100%. Okay. Anything else you want to add on splits, fees, that type of stuff?
Yeah, just check the fees. Like this, this should be simple. It shouldn't be something that like, hey, this is how much we get. And then after that, you start to this fee on every single deal. Mm-hmm. I know when I used to recruit here at KW, we had royalties, and then other large companies have royalties, and other local companies have transaction fees, and other people have marketing fees. Like, mm-hmm. understand what your fees are. Everybody has these things, you know, padded into their to mm-hmm. their profit. So really focus on value. Ask what kind of fees are going to be coming, and then same thing as we've said this entire time. Ask people that are there. Mm-hmm. You know, like. Yeah. Is this, if the team leader or the leader of that is saying the same thing as the agents, unprompted, then I think you're probably finding yourself in a pretty good spot.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Okay, what about mentorship and being able to grow within the team? So a question you should ask is, can I eventually mentor, lead, or build a team within the team? Or like, what does the growth opportunities look like? And I think this is an interesting discussion point in a topic because it kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier, how a lot of people outgrow their teams that they're on. And that's why you have such high turnover on teams for mm-hmm. various different reasons, on whether that's splits, all of the different things we've talked about, coaching, mentorship, training. But as a team leader listening or somebody joining a team, like how do you focus on that retention and how do you create those growth paths within the team to retain your agents?
I think the first thing is know who your people are. Know your people. Like, mm-hmm. Once an agent gets bigger than the team, there's no reason for them to be there. So your leaders and the organization has to continually grow mm-hmm. bigger than your individual agents. Otherwise, those people are going to leave. And that's just the name of the game when it comes to business and building any team. But I think you got to know your people. Like, if you have a couple of top performers or your operational staff, if we don't know their goals, how can we ever create a growth path for them? Mm-hmm. But we have to be able to say, hey, this is your skill sets, this is what you're great at, and then provide them with a growth path of here's how you can continue to grow and or make more money or bring on more responsibilities, whatever they want. Mm-hmm. Maybe an agent wants more time. This is how you do that.
Yep.
But we have to understand our people at a high level and then build systems, processes, and operations that allow for an organization that can grow and have different paths underneath it. Mm. It's a very broad answer, but like,
yeah.
there's so much in that question.
No, there is. And I mean, again, I can't speak to other teams. All we can speak to is like what we do. So from your perspective, what growth opportunities are we trying to create on our team? Have we created? Let's talk a little bit about like, I feel like we're very transparent with our team of where we're going and what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
So
we start with Asia.
Yeah. Asia is a great example.
I mean,
Asia's been with us pretty much from the beginning and started out as our operations director. Now she's transitioned more into listing manager and staging. And so what we have found is we want to be able to create business opportunities for our operational staff within the business. And then obviously for the agents too, but Asia's a great example of, okay, how can we create a staging company in a separate sector so that she can not only have her base pay salary, but have some type of a bonus structure and an opportunity for growth and to continue to grow that skill set and money and income for her while leveraging, you know, our resources, assets, and then we're continuing to invest in the business so that that staging can grow for her. So yep. That would be just an opportunity for like our W-2 employees that yep. we're working through.
So I feel like our operational staff, all of them have a growth path of where they can earn and make more money. And I, like Maya, for instance, going more towards that new construction path. Mm-hmm. For agents, showing assistant, very good growth path, right? Like we're bringing them on, we have a 6-month commitment and then a transition to either shared services or potentially becoming a buyer's agent on our core team. Mm-hmm. That in itself is a growth path. For mm-hmm. Katie, as she hits capacity, for us, growth paths and hiring all come because of capacity. So when Katie's at capacity on the buy side, mm-hmm. well, can we bring in a second buyer's agent and can she help with training, mentorship, and guiding that person? Mm-hmm. And we'll find
create
our faults in that.
Yep. Yep.
We'll figure out how the monies and the numbers can make sense so it's fair all around. But then does that give her the opportunity to become more of a leader mm-hmm. and have multiple buyer agents, which mm-hmm. is just a division or sales division, right? Like, mm-hmm. can she oversee that team of buyer's agents practicing and doing things that she set out for how to find success in that role? Mm-hmm. For Anthony's a really good example too, right? Yeah. Like he was a newer agent for the last year or two, finding his way, figuring out what kind of lead generation things that he wanted to do. But what I saw in him was his work ethic and his scripting and skills, how he sounds on the phone, his mm-hmm. ability to do the work, right?
Very disciplined and consistent.
Yeah, so bringing him on as our lead manager, I've talked to him already. When Shannon, or our ISA, when we get her to 2 to 3 deals per month over 3 months, we're going to immediately start hiring.
Closing, is that what you mean by that?
Sorry, yeah. When we get 3 closings from one ISA, mm-hmm. we're going to start hiring for a second. But his goal, and our goal for him, is to get him to have 5 ISAs underneath him, and now he's leading our whole entire lead generation division, mm-hmm. Which provides a tremendous amount of growth because there's so much leverage. Now you're having 180 calls from 5 people a day over 5 days. Now all, what he's doing is managing leads and mm-hmm. making sure the right people are at the right places at the right times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's a pattern in everything that you're saying, right? To create growth opportunities for people, it's not always just more leads, more this. It's also creating incentives and structures and a path so that they can kind of like have something their own and become a leader within that department mm-hmm. or division, whatever you want to call it. So, and both of those people are going to be fantastic, great fits at doing that, and then trusting them to mentor the people underneath them. And that's what creates that culture as the company grows, because just the two leaders at the top can't do that.
Nope.
Like it takes creating those opportunities and leaders within the team if you want to successfully continue to grow that culture.
But we have to have a vision for these people. We have to know their skill sets and give them that path, right? Mm-hmm. And that takes a lot of trust. So I'm so grateful for our people because they trust that we're going to make the right decisions, that they can hit their goals. And then I'm so happy that we have people that we can trust in those positions and they own what they do. Mm-hmm. And if they own what they do, then we're, you know, like there's mutual benefit there of like we're going to grow and develop on the right.
Yeah, it's got to be a win-win timeline for everyone.
Yep, I agree. Okay, any last things here?
I don't think so. I think that wraps up our 3-part series of brokerage and team questions.
Yeah, and the reason we gave our splits was to compare to others, mm-hmm. right? If we're at 60-40 on list, 70-30 on buy side, and 50-50 on our core team, and the amount of things that we have, and if mm-hmm. you want to know about those things, ask us. We'll mm-hmm. tell you what those value adds are. Mm-hmm. That'll give you a good comparison to your other teams that are doing 80-20s, 90-10s, mm-hmm. whatever that may be.
Yep.
Okay.
All right.
All right, cool. See you guys next week.
Next week.
Next week.